Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N+1 studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. In this podcast, we explore the world of endurance multisport. If it has to do with swimming, biking, running, or any combination of the three, we're there. This week, we're going to be talking about the recent disruption in the wonderful world of Garmin. Pretty much affected anybody that owns a Garmin device or that uses a Garmin device for tracking or that links to Garmin Connect. And yeah, it was quite a disruption. Anyway, I'm your host, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. How are you doing today, Brian?
Dude, I'm phenomenal. I'm here. I'm ready. Woo-hoo. Locked and loaded, ready to go.
So did you ever have any major disruptions this past week?
Besides Garmin? Oh, it's been good. It's been a good week for the most part. It's the same as every week. Well, except for the whole bathroom mirror coming crashing down over the weekend.
Yeah, let's talk about the 7 years of bad luck that you have now, not that you...
No, I did not break the mirror.
That's true. That's
the mirror
Nobody
broke
in your
itself.
Family broke, yeah.
The mirror was like, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't like you people.
I think
I'm
want to be on the floor in pieces.
I'm out. I'm outie. That's what the
How
mirror said
How big was
to
that
us.
Mirror?
It was huge because it went the length of the two sinks. It was pretty much took up the whole wall. So it was, what, four or five feet wide?
4 or 5 feet wide.
2 or 3 feet tall.
Like 2 or 3 feet tall.
It was big. It was a big
mirror. Yeah, it was at least 3 feet tall. Yeah, I guess.
We will... I think we're going to replace it with two mirrors. Jenny wants to get two mirrors. I wonder if we'll get like the medicine cabinet mirrors and I can have storage in the bathroom there now.
My sister, when she renovated her house, she did like the full mirror that has a cabinet in it. And she was really smart. She put the outlets like inside. So when you open up the cabinet, so like her toothbrush, electric toothbrush and everything is plugged in inside, her husband's razor and everything inside. So nothing's on the counter. She's very much a minimalist. I mean, she's lucky that there's any pictures on her walls.
I don't mind having plugs on the outside. I don't know what we're going to do. I think Jenny wants to go with two mirrors, though.
Yeah, it's a little safer. You had like mirror glass everywhere, didn't
you?
It
went everywhere. It shot out into the hall and into our bedroom, and it went all over the place. It was wild.
Nobody was upstairs, though, when it
happened. No one was upstairs, because it probably would have been bad. Although I think about that, if I'd been there when it happened, it may not have shattered as much, because it would have hit the counter and fallen over on me. Would that have shattered
if you'd
it?
Been in the bath?
If I had been standing there like in front of it? Because it would have fallen on me. The question is, would it have shattered if it had hit me?
Or would have it just kind of bounced?
Or would I have been able to catch it or take it on the head or whatever? If it had hit me on the head, it probably would have broken
hurt.
Potentially.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's an interesting question is if you'd been... Because what broke it was when it hit the tub because it fell over and then fell... kind of into the tub
okay
and or onto the ground. I mean, it's not going to survive a 3-foot fall.
no so the glue just like let go.
Basically the glue just let go. It was really weird. It didn't take the wall. It didn't take the drywall.
Huh.
There's glue on the back of the mirror and there's glue on the drywall.
Wow.
So basically the glue just failed.
Now, I mean, there's one theory, too, that I heard Jenny saying, well, maybe it was you, that because that bathroom's right above where the house was hit by the car several months ago. I'm wondering if that disrupted the wall.
There's a good chance that may have helped accelerate the failure of the glue. The house did shake pretty good, from what I understand, when it got hit.
Mm-hmm.
That means, you've got, a 40, 50-pound mirror on the wall. It's going to shake with it. Could that have helped accelerate the problem? It probably would have fallen anyway, eventually.
Right, eventually, yeah.
But it could have been 10 years from now instead of last weekend.
So you had that happen. Now, mine was a little less. I was outside and heard a huge crash yesterday and was like, what the heck did the cats just knock over? Like looking all over the house. And finally, I went into our bedroom and my husband's closet had fallen down and I sent him a picture. He's out of town and he's like, called me and he said, yeah, you did tell me to fix that a while ago. I said, yeah, I did.
Yeah.
So
it's a little late.
Kind of predictable that was going to happen. He's like, sorry. Uh-huh. Thank you.
The time had come.
Yeah.
Well,
now he has absolutely no recourse when I start pitching stuff that's been sitting up there for forever. I'm good. I'll take pictures and go, hey, can I get rid of this? Hey, can I get rid of this? And he usually has to say yes because he's not there. That's how I do my clean out.
Usually it's about a year or two later, I'm like, What happened to this? I've been looking for this. Oh, I threw that out 2 years ago.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Well, I've gotten in trouble. I don't get asked. I've gotten in a lot of trouble for that. So I've learned to document when I'm told that I can throw something out because I didn't once, and I still hear about that. But I text them. I'm like, can I throw away jeans with holes? I mean, the man's got 40 pairs of jeans.
Yeah.
He's got to. And there's huge rips in these jeans. I don't want these anymore. I'm not going to use them. I don't do any crafting. I don't need them. There's no reason for these to exist in our house. So I got a text back, yes. And I'm like, okay. So that got rid of that.
Yeah, my wife did that. She just throws stuff away.
Well, like I said, I mean, I still hear about it.
The hilarious part, though, was... The hilarious part is we're cleaning out a room upstairs. And so I just was like going through and just throwing stuff out. And then Jenny found the trash can and she picked three or four things out and
put it back in. Do y'all ever watch The Hoarders Show? I watch it very infrequently.
The Hoarders Show is scary.
It's, yeah, those when they like go back through and they're taking pieces of paper out of the trash.
Yeah, what Jenny retrieved, I don't really have a super problem with them. I don't think we need it.
Yeah.
But I understand. It's not like, oh, look, there's my old Snickers wrapper. I need to go pick that up and put that back in my house because that wrapper was... I ate that Snickers bar when I was watching episode 33 of...
Tiger King.
Bunked or whatever. My son's watching now. We have moved on. The good news is we're moving away from YouTube to some extent. Because we used to be watching YouTube all the time. And that really gets annoying after a while. I don't mind it for short periods of time. Because most of those guys are pretty good at what they do.
Well, you guys are watching gamers playing.
The gamers playing and... A lot of them are pretty entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, they get a little annoying, their antics and things of that nature.
The reason why they're entertaining kind of starts to fade after a while when you see it over and over and over again.
It becomes a little bit grinding at times,
mm-hmm.
just their voice. And it's like listening to the same voice for hours and hours. Eventually, it becomes kind of grating. We started with The Investigators, which was a great show.
Yeah, that is a good little show.
It's, I guess, takes place in Australia. It's mm-hmm. these... four kids who are in middle school who do... One girl's basically a mini Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
And they've created their investigative services company off it, and these five friends. And it's a very entertaining show as they solve all these conundrums that pop up in their daily lives. But now we've moved on to Bunked, which is a Disney show, which apparently is a spinoff of another show called Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
Which that one your kids watched?
My kids watched Jesse, yes.
That was about a nanny who was watching four kids?
There was like four or five kids, I guess. Yeah, I and they were like all adopted by this wealthy couple.
Yes.
And you never saw them. All you ever saw was the nanny, Jesse.
There were three kids. Adopted and one actual.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, this is...
They watched it and it like didn't cuss, so I was like, all right, they can watch.
Well, this is the spinoff of that.
Okay.
I guess the kids got older. They don't need a nanny anymore. What do we do with them? Well, we send them to summer camp. The Bunked show is about them in summer camp for the summer.
Okay.
And their episode, whatever they have to do to summer camp. And so we've been binge watching that. Apparently my son likes to binge watch.
He likes to see everything from beginning to end. He's never going to be a child that reads more than one book at a time, that's for sure.
Probably not. He binge watches, and it's kind of strange. Because he won't always watch. He'll like game or something like that while it's playing in the background mm-hmm. sometimes.
He's multitasking.
Which is really strange. Mm-hmm. Then we go through the season, all two or three seasons of it. Well, the third season wasn't any good. We just were like, nah, this is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of, well, some of the four kids.
Yeah, they changed the characters.
Well, in the first two seasons, they're kind of, the older kids are camp, the counselors, and the younger one's a camper, and they deal with the campers. The third one, they become owners of the camp, and there's new characters. The love interest for the hot blonde, he just magically disappears. They never explain why he disappears. They were dating and madly in love the season before, and then he just is gone from the script writers altogether.
Glad they didn't kill him off.
And then apparently at the end of season three, the kids all have these great summer jobs next year, so they have to sell the camp to the one counselor that was there all four seasons. So it's going to be a whole new cast again in season four and five. Wow. Apparently, it got signed off for a season five.
Huh.
On Netflix, we only had the first three seasons, fortunately. But unfortunately, my son likes to rewatch. So I think we're on round three.
Oh, my God. Of the same.
Fortunately, it's like The Investigators. It's actually a halfway decent show.
Okay.
and that makes it tolerable.
Tolerable for you, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
The other thing that happened was my son, he asked me to explain to him about what a solar eclipse is, and I was like, no, son.
Ooh, that's something that I did this past week. Not, well, kind of related to your horrible joke, but I saw the comet. I went out and with a few friends and drank a beer, had some binoculars, and I actually did see this blue blurb with a tail.
It's a blur on the, it's about all they are.
Yeah, the moon was really bright that night too, that so makes that it made worse. It a lot harder to see it, but I did find it, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I don't think, what was it, 68,000 years before it'll be seen again? It's like, okay.
I almost got taken out by a car on Sunday again.
Walking, biking?
Biking. Really annoying too. I was making my way back home and I had to be a kid or something. Went blowing by me at about a foot away. There was no one coming the other way. He just did it on purpose.
Nice.
Oh, I was pissed. I was yelling. I was hoping he'd stop, you know, because sometimes you start yelling and flip people off. They'll like stop. I was hoping he'd stop and we could have fisticuffs because I was ready to go on this one. Like, if you're going to take me out, at least let's go mano a mano and give me a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. Get out of your 2,000 pound vehicle and let's see how tough you are.
Mm. Yeah, let's go on this one. I mean, I don't mind people going by me fast. It's when they go by fast at a close distance like that. It's like, come on. Yeah. Give me a foot or two.
Yeah. People just don't realize, I mean, if there's a pothole, if there's anything, flipping rock that you got to go around, you've got to give that 3 feet.
No, my big problem is they misjudge the distance.
Yeah.
And they actually hit me rather than anything
rather
else.
Than just get super close.
They get rather than get super close. That's, unfortunately, in the U.S., we drive on the left side of the car. You really don't have a great idea where the right side of the car is. Maybe he thought he was further away than he was.
Well, if you were on the right side of the car, you would be on the opposite side of the road, so you'd have the same problem. But anywhere in the world, that's an issue. But
it's always an issue. Maybe he thought he was further away than he was.
Inexperienced drivers.
That's always a possibility.
You know, but
still. That gets me, because it doesn't take much to be off, and you've hit me. And if you hit me, that's probably going to end poorly for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I will definitely go down.
Yeah.
I don't think I was going super fast at that point, so it wouldn't have been horrific. It's not like I'm doing like 20 miles an hour and get clipped, which would be really bad.
I mean, getting clipped by any vehicle that's going more than a crawl is going to hurt.
Yes, but
it's going to spin you. It's going to throw
you. It's going to throw me, but being thrown at like 5 and 6 miles an hour is a lot better than being thrown at 20 miles an hour.
Good point. Good point. Yeah.
Speed doesn't kill. It's speed differential that cause problems. The lower the speed differential, the better.
I mean, I had felt like I've had a really successful riding season this year and like very, very few instances where I've had drivers get anywhere close to me, but it has happened. And it just seems to be happening a little bit more. We had one car last night with a group that got was a little too close.
I've only had two that get close, and that always happens about once a year. Someone gets close.
Yeah.
It generally doesn't bother me. It's when they get really close. This year I've had two closer calls, and I've probably had in the last 4 or 5 where they where I was feeling the wind as they were going by off their mirrors. That is not a good feeling, by the way.
No, can't imagine.
That was really close. It is what it is. It's It is, like I said, it's just what it is.
Well, I'm glad you're okay.
No one
actually hit you.
No one hit me. We're good.
You're still upright.
Yay. I just wanted to have fisticuffs.
Yeah.
I was tired. That was like a 3-hour ride. I was coming home.
Oh.
Yeah. That got me riled.
Well, our podcast this week is sponsored by 3Sport Endurance Coaching. 3SE develops training plans and support for athletes at all levels, whether they're just getting their feet wet in triathlon or experienced competitors. The coaches at 3SE can work with an individual to customize a training plan and meet their specific needs. If you're looking for a coach, check them out at go3sport.com. All right, so the big news this week in the world of sports was, oh my God, Garmin, what happened? They got hacked big time.
Yeah, I was asking some FBI agents I know how the hackers were able to escape, and they were like, no idea. They just ran somewhere. Garmin got hit by a ransomware group.
It's so bizarre to me that happens.
It is a high-tech kidnapping is really what happened.
Yeah.
Is the simple answer for it. It's an old-fashioned kidnapping. been done in the digital age.
Yep.
Hackers got into a big chunk of their infrastructure, which is disappointing to say the least, that their security
allowed
the that deep
bad.
A penetration.
Yeah.
It's one thing to have your servers and compromised on the net, but to have big chunks of your infrastructure compromised too is not very good.
So how does this happen? I mean, does somebody open up the wrong email and go, whoops?
Maybe. Most likely it was some type of unpatched software exploit.
Okay.
That they use to gain access. The people that do this are really good. They're not hacking from their machine. They're hacking 4, 5, 6 machines to create a trail that's nearly impossible to follow. If I hack machine X in one way and then machine Y in a different way and then Z in a completely different way, it becomes very hard to trace your way back to the originating server.
Okay.
Once they get in, what they did was they went and encrypted the file system. Without a password, you're not going to decrypt it, at least not in the next, say, 100 years. You might get lucky and decrypt it in 10 or 15 years. Yeah. And then they're like, well, you give us a bunch of money and we'll give you the code to decrypt all this. Today's world, we can do that because of the cryptocurrency, things like Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Since it is a paperless transaction, I can deposit X number of dollars into someone's account and there's no way to track it.
Now, what I saw, just kind of looking at all the Facebook, in America, that's illegal to like actually pay the ransom. So they were talking about, that's what insurance is for. And, they had a third party do it, whatever. But Garmin's not saying if they actually paid it or not. But now that things are running up again and it's not 100 years later, I'm guessing.
The problem with paying is there's a good chance they could potentially come back at
again.
A later date.
Yeah.
A lot of it depends on how confident you are in your security team.
I'm assuming that they've upgraded that quite a bit.
Well, what I'm surprised with is they didn't have backups that they could get to easily. I mean, like, I guess they were worried that the ransomware sat there for a while before it went off.
Okay.
Would be my only thing.
So they were afraid that it was affecting the backups too? And
well, that it would be there, and as soon as they brought the backups up, it would run again, and they'd be
destroy
in the same
the
place they
yeah.
were.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. You'd have to find out all the details of how they got hacked and why things happened. But it seems like you would have snapshots of a lot of that, because no one runs physical servers anymore. It's all virtual based. You would think you'd have snapshots of that virtual that you could just move off to a data center like an Amazon or Microsoft or something like that. Because all these cloud-based servers, if you have a cloud solution, if all your servers are cloud-based, you should be able to take those images and take them to a different data center and run them. It's kind of weird that it took them so long to become operational and didn't have any type of backup. I guess they were worried, especially for their infrastructure. Now I could see where they might not want to do the public-facing ones because, in theory, if I did something like that, you might lose 2 or 3 days worth of data.
Mm-hmm.
And as bad as people freaked out over this already.
Oh, my God.
Which is really
out.
What we wanted to talk about today was the actual freak out of it, not the actual event.
Yeah. I mean, it's fairly resolved now. I know your Garmin Connect's working fine. Mine on my phone is not. I still can't download my bike computer. My watch is downloading fine.
I think my bike computer uploaded.
You think your bike computer did? Yeah, I couldn't get mine to last night, so I manually
did it
from Strava. Yeah.
I mean, generally, I don't care. Although the funny thing is there was actually, right when it happened, there was a ride that I did that I kind of hammered to try to avoid rain, and I got my average speed on it, and I was like, dang, I wonder what my power output for this was. But I couldn't get to it because I guess I could have if I really cared. Almost all the Garmin devices, the data's there. You just have to use your device to actually review the data.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is not that big of a deal. Which is what kind of surprised me when people freaked out. I was trying to figure out why people were freaking out. The data itself is always going to be on your device. Those devices hold data for months, even when they're synced up. The way Garmin sets their stuff up is they generally clear the oldest stuff as devices fill up.
I think what might have been part of that freak out, I mean, people just, they couldn't see everything. And if they had an older device, a lot of times, I mean, I know with my older devices, I was having to delete stuff to make room for the new stuff. So if you're somebody that has an older device, it's like, crap, how long is this going to go on? How much is actually going to be able to store on my watch? Da, 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 da. People were afraid that they just don't understand that their device is going to hold it.
And that's probably the first takeaway from this, is the devices are going to hold your data for the, they were never going to be down. They were actually down longer than I thought they'd be, but they were never going to be down a month. At most, they were going to be down a week. Because I think I could have bought servers and had them shipped to my house and got it started again within a week.
You know, if somebody's got like a 4Runner 10 or, you know, an old device, you know, if I was...
They probably weren't syncing through Garmin Connect anyway. Most of the Garmin Connect stuff is all the, especially stuff that where the devices themselves sync, is all newer stuff.
Right, no, but my Garmin, I mean, all my Garmin data for years is on Garmin Connect.
But you had to like connect with like a device and then upload it through the Garmin Connect app on your computer. It wasn't
correct.
The device
but
itself
the Garmin
didn't
Connect
update.
App, everything was down. I mean, even their website was down.
Well, yeah, they lost everything.
Yeah, they lost. I mean, there was nothing.
So you have that. But if I'm using the computer based one, it's storing those on my local computer, which would eventually sync up. Really, what you're worried about is your device. If mm-hmm. I'm using an old device that had to go through my computer to upload, when you go onto your computer, it loads it locally. It takes the file off
of
the
watch. Okay, so even though you can't see it on Garmin Connect, it still would have been on there.
It still would have been on your PC, because what these devices do, it's just a serial type cable that takes the file, puts it on your local file system, and then uploads it to Garmin.
Okay. Yeah. So kind of like what I was doing, like I was taking mine, plugging it into the computer and downloading it, uploading it to Strava.
Right. It's no different than that.
Okay.
They've just kind of taken some of the middle steps out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, people were absolutely losing their minds, though. It was wild.
I was surprised at how much people were freaked out about this. And I guess it was because they couldn't see their data right then and there about their workouts.
Yeah, I guess. We're so used to immediate feedback and
not getting it. They freaked out.
Not getting it.
To me, this hints to a bigger problem that some athletes need to think about and maybe even address. Let's think about this in a little more detail for a second. I'm worried about not getting a data for a workout in a year where that workout is pretty meaningless. There is no championships this year. No sport in the endurance world is having a championship this year. Ironman got canceled. The 70.3, the full got canceled. Most of your big running races were canceled. Anything of any size, hell, the Olympics were canceled.
Yeah.
Anything of any size got canceled this year.
Got canceled, yeah.
Your one individual workout in July, we're still in July.
We're still in July. Groundhog Day, yeah.
Groundhog Day.
What day is it?
Is going to be inconsequential, especially since the data's around. You can always look at it later.
Right.
That is a meaningless data point. Why are you freaking out about this? Yeah. This hints at some level of addiction that is problematic.
Well, shoot, you saw me this morning when I got to the pool and looked at my wrist and my watch was not there. And I went, oh my God. It's like the first time ever. Oh, that was bad. That was bad. And every time we hit the wall, I'm like, it's not there. I probably reached for it like 8 times today during a 50-minute swim. I'm like, all right, this is bad.
This is... There's no doubt that this is an addiction. I mean, it pretty much hits the definition of addiction, where the behavior is compulsive and continues to somewhat of a... At some point, that becomes harmful, I think. You've got to be able to pull yourself away from that addiction. And you'll hear it. I mean, the people will deny it. Oh, it's not really a problem.
Well, then do workouts for a week without a watch.
You know, they begin to rationalize why I'm doing it, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask them to take the watch off and do a workout or do anything, they won't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like to have the data, but if I don't have it, like it was down, oh well, it's not the end of the world.
I did get our yardage from the guy in the lane next to me. It's like, how much did we do? I lost count.
I just don't. You've got to be able to disassociate yourself from the need for that, because that's pointing to something that your identity is wrapped up in data.
Well, it's also like being an injured athlete and your identity is wrapped up in being that athlete when you can't do it anymore and you can't find, you know, and you're obsessed with, oh my God, I can't run. Instead of looking at other things that you can do and, you know, looking at data, I got to have it. Well, how about how you felt?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, did the stroke feel better when you were swimming today?
And I will say this, to some extent, it really isn't the fault of the athletes. These companies are very good
at
bringing you addicted to these. Garmin was very smart to be able to have all this data and make it available, and they've made people addicted to it. They aren't as bad as Facebook and social media, who intentionally try to keep you on their websites. Garmin's not interested in that. They just want to make sure you have data. Enough data that you can pour over that you can addict yourself to the data.
But like if I look at my Garmin Connect right now, it says I'm detraining. Oh my gosh, that's irritating as all get go. And it's just because things haven't caught up with it. And I don't, you know, but I'm like, oh, I really need to go through and like take off some of those screens because it's bothersome. It's like, okay, you're telling me I'm not good enough. You're telling me I'm doing something wrong when I look at that and it says I'm detraining. No, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm doing just fine. I'm not injured. I'm not racing. It's fine. So it's like, but they're very good at kind of keeping you pulled in. And
they keep you pulled in, but you've got to be aware that it's a problem. Mm-hmm. If you were freaked out about this, you've got a problem. I mean, is it life crippling? No, it's not the end of the world. At the same time, it's something that needs to be dealt with. It's not good to be addicted to this technology, addicted to needing a device. Because now you can't go out and just ride. You have to have the device. You have to have the numbers. Mm-hmm. Or the ride didn't count.
It's interesting. I paced somebody with a half marathon a couple of years ago. And she was really disappointed with her time. And she was like, oh, I need to turn off my watch so that nobody sees this. I don't want to download this. I don't want anybody to know that this time is associated with me. And I kind of looked at her and I was like, I'm running with you. This is nowhere near a PR for me. You know, I was pacing her and I was like, and it doesn't matter to me. She was like, oh, yeah, okay. But it was like her perception of herself was all about that data and making sure nobody else could see it.
Yeah, this is a general problem of
back away from that.
Of having importance placed on something that is unimportant and to a great extent, something you always can't control.
Mm-hmm.
Like your time, how far, you maybe don't feel good that day.
Yeah, she didn't feel good that day.
Something happens. But you're so wrapped up in the data and so wrapped up in the numbers, and it has such a, you put so much emphasis on the importance of that number that it becomes a roller coaster. That now all of a sudden training becomes this roller coaster of up and down. We saw the same thing with races. When races started getting canceled, people would freak out.
Yeah.
They've become too addicted to whatever and find so much self-importance and they put too much emphasis on something that isn't, that can go away.
Right.
As we can see, or can be bad as we see.
I mean, people like to compete. The reason why we do this, we like to push ourselves. We like, you know, I mean, that's why we do it. See what we can do. But you don't have to necessarily have a race or have those numbers.
The problem is yourself. The focal point is on the wrong thing. The focal point should be on the process of getting better. That's where the enjoyment is. The actual numbers can help guide the process. The results from races can help guide the process, but they shouldn't be the reason we train.
Yeah.
We're training because we enjoy the training. We enjoy getting outside. We enjoy working. You know, for me, swimming, biking, and running, that's the things you did as a kid for fun, right? We'd go out and bike, we'd go out and swim. I didn't get to swim as much as a kid because we didn't have a membership to the pool. But other than that, it was stuff you did as a kid for fun.
For fun, exactly.
We should be doing that for fun as an adult. Yeah, it's fun to race. It's fun to be able to compete and do those types of things. But the result of the race, the data and the times, they shouldn't matter. They're a guide to the process. They're not the end. Everybody looks at that as the end result, and therefore they get freaked out when they can't get that end result. Right. They can't get that nicotine hit of that.
I mean, I'm working with one of our athletes now, teach him how to swim. And I'm having a blast just being in the pool and swimming. I'm doing a third of the yardage, and I'm going slow, and da-da-da-da-da. I'm keeping track of it just so that he knows what he's doing. But it's so much fun just to swim. It's like, okay, this is why I do this. I like biking with slower people too. It's just fun to bike. I like being on a bike. It doesn't matter. You know, it's fun to see how fast I went, but it's not always about that.
And that's the problem people run into. And that creates a roller coaster of emotion in mm-hmm. people. This is why people get up and down. Oh man, I had that great ride. And they get so excited and they have a couple down rides and they get so, oh my God, this is the end of the world. Why am I not doing better? And I'm like, well, there's a lot of reasons you may not be doing well this
Every
week.
Every ride cannot be the best ride.
That's ever. Right. Everything can't be
well,
the
actually,
best.
It can be, because it can be fun for different reasons. You know, I mean, if you just
But it can't be it. The, it can't be, every ride can't be better than the last one numerically. It's an impossibility for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. The body just can't do that continually. It has to take a break.
Yeah. Yep.
It's just fascinating. I guess my takeaway from this, or what I want people to take away from this type of episode, is to be aware that this addiction is real. Maybe you need to start to look at your premises for why you work out, why you train, and reemphasize elements that are process related and not result related. Mm-hmm. You'll be happier as an athlete if you are more process related than result related, because results are random and they can be taken away.
So between us not having any races this year and now Garmin crashing, we're all learning about the process, whether we wanted to or not.
Yeah, that's right.
Hopefully, I mean...
Well, what this year has...
Hopefully, we're going to see a whole bunch of happier athletes, you know, when we come out of all of this, because everybody's gotten a new understanding, maybe.
Yeah, what maybe. This year has been able to do is it allows me to better illustrate some of the things I've been talking about for a year or two and now, mm-hmm. and that you can't control the results of a race because you don't even know if the race is going to happen.
There could be a pandemic.
Something completely out of your control took your race away from you.
Yeah.
Those are things you should not be putting emphasis on. Results, races, these are not the points of emphasis. These are things that are there to challenge us, see how we're doing in our challenge of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But they are not the end result. And so many people make these things the end result. And we see it with the Garmin data. It's the same thing. It's that I can't see my data, therefore something didn't happen. What happened? And the funny thing is people don't even know what they're looking at with most of that Garmin.
Yeah.
We'll have to do a future podcast on what to take or what you should be looking at as an average athlete at Garmin
data.
That'd
be a good idea. We need to...
Maybe we'll do that as one of our next episodes. We'll do something on what to look what are the data is important and what should you
and
be looking at.
What pages just to eliminate, like that detraining one. Yeah. We'll just take that one out.
what you should be focusing on with each sport with regards to this data based on what equipment you have and such mm-hmm. and such. That would be a good topic. Need to stop looking at the end result. They need to stop looking at, oh, how many miles did I do this week? Did I get enough miles in? Because that's really what is probably driving a lot of this.
Yeah.
Is am I getting my miles in this week? Which is a completely arbitrary and useless statistic and something mm-hmm. people shouldn't even really care about.
Mm-hmm.
But they do. And that's really what drives some of this freak out is I'm not getting my hours in. It's not so much that I can't see, oh, I couldn't see my heart rate for this workout. It's like, did I record how many yards I swam or how many miles I ran or how many miles I biked so I can...
Well, I'm part of
ooh,
it.
Ooh, I biked my
miles.
We'll
have to talk about all the wonderful challenges and all that kind of competition that goes on that drives
well,
people
I mean, I
to
can't,
do so
I can't,
many miles that they really shouldn't be doing.
And I can't brag on Facebook that I did 400 miles of biking last week.
Yeah, yeah.
Which a lot of people use this to... provide status in their life, these numbers mm-hmm. that they, and so when they don't get them, they worry about it. And it's mm-hmm. unnecessary because, again, it's got to be process driven. It can't be number driven.
Yeah.
And too many people get number driven. This is a chance to take stock of, am I that person? I'm willing to bet that a lot of people listening to this are probably that person. Just insane.
Raise my hand over here.
I have gotten a lot better at it. I still keep a device with me most of the time. I could ride without a device, and I wouldn't lose sleep over it.
Yeah.
It is weird to ride without a device.
Mm-hmm. It was very weird to swim this morning without one.
And a lot of times, I'll be honest, I don't even look at the data. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I'm looking at certain elements of the data for a performance standpoint.
If I'm feeling tired, it's like, huh. And I'll look back and it's like, oh, well, that's why, because you did this, 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 and this, and you probably worn out. Take a day off.
There you go. I don't do that. I'm looking at like certain elements of my data. Like what was my pace on a certain run? Did I keep the pace? Mm-hmm. Occasionally I'll look at data for some of that. As a coach, I kind of know what's important to look at and what's not important to look at. And occasionally I dive in just to make sure things are on track. But this year I've done even less of that because what am I on track for?
Yeah.
There's no races. There's nothing.
You're out there having fun.
It's just a year of let's go out and have fun. My running has dried up this year considerably.
Because you don't like to run. So there you go.
Running is not my favorite of the three sports. I've been doing it about once a week on the treadmill. I get about 30 minutes. Sometimes I get twice, two 30-minute sessions in a week of running. For the most part, I'm biking 4 or 5 days a week.
You only do that so that you can eat donuts.
That's probably true.
It's the important thing.
So I keep my boyish figure. So I don't get a dad bod. That was one of the greatest things. I was at one of the training things for USAT, and they're like, let's be honest, the reason we do this so we look good in a bathing suit. It's the only reason we do this. Everything comes back to looking good in a bathing suit. That's probably true for 99% of the people that do this.
Yeah. I talked to a runner, this was several weeks ago, and she was on a bike ride that I was on, and I hadn't seen her for a while, and I knew that she was injured. She's always in front of me. She's usually one of the top three women in a race, and she's in my age group too, so it's rather depressing. But she's recently injured, and she was like, so what diet plan do you follow? And I kind of looked at her. I'm like, Twinkies? She's like, oh, so none. Okay. She stopped running, and it's her body's taking a hit. You know, she's just like, I don't know what to do now.
It's the same problem you run into in the off season. That's the problem, that injury and off season, there's one area they have in common. You're used to consuming a lot of calories. Mm-hmm. To manage your work rate.
Right.
You may have come underneath that so that you could lose some weight. But generally, you're going from, I know myself, I mean, in the summer, I'm averaging 2,200 to 2,500 calories a day because I'm burning anywhere between 500 to 1,000, 1,500 calories in any given day.
Mm-hmm.
And my baseline's right around 2,000. You can do the math. I've got to get 2,500 calories in me each day to break even. Once I go to the off season, I'm used to eating 2,500 calories a day. Now I need to cap out at like 1,900.
Right.
Well, 600 calories doesn't sound like much.
Oh, it's a lot.
But it can be a lot. Now, granted, most of that for me is junk food. But
yeah, I've seen your kitchen. How many? But
it's hard to cut out that junk food once you get to an end of the season, and all of a sudden your activity level. Yeah. Drops to nothing, and it gets exacerbated by winter when you can't get outside and just walk up and down the driveway easily.
Yeah.
I mean, in the summer, I probably average 3,000 more steps than I do in the winter just because I can go outside and walk around for a few minutes. I'm not confined to the house.
Shoot, when school shut down back in March, I didn't realize just how many steps I was taking a day.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, I was home, and it was like, whoa, this is different. Anyway, I think we're getting off topic. It all follows the same thing. So don't be addicted to your devices. Thank Garmin for getting their together.
And if you are addicted, start thinking about how you can withdraw from it. Like, can I go for a ride without a device? Force yourself to go on a ride without a device. Don't record something.
Mm-hmm. You know the routes well enough anyway if you're riding your bike.
Try to wean yourself from the device so that you're not in that state of panic that, oh, there's no data.
Yeah. Yep.
Because, heck, your device can die on a ride. A lot of things can potentially happen that could not record your potential workout.
And that's when we thank God that Strava has the share with somebody who didn't record.
But the thing is this is the perfect time to give up the addiction because we're not racing.
Yeah.
There's no race in the next 2 or 3 months outside of some maybe local, small, independent races. But those aren't ones you're focusing on as a key race. Mm-hmm. No one does that. I mean, some people might, but most people don't.
I mean, if it was somebody's first race or something like that, it might be significant and you want to, you know, record it. Yeah. But
for the most part, if you're a racer who's been racing for years, your local sprint triathlon is probably not your key race for the year. I'm just guessing. Wild guess.
Well, I mean, since it's the only one, it might be. But anyway.
But those are the only things going on. Yeah. So this is the time to wean yourself from the addiction of data. If you want to record it for posterity so you can have totals somewhere down the road, cool. Don't look at it. Don't even worry about it, whether or not it gets posted. Yeah. Better yet, don't run with a device. Don't bike with a device. Don't swim with a device. Break yourself of the habit of having to see that number.
Yeah.
This is the time to do it. This is a great time to do it. We don't have anything important coming up. There's no reason to look at the data.
Alrighty. Well, good advice. Hope everybody has a wonderful week, and we will talk to you next week.